kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up. First off, if the audio is weird, I am in my new house, fucking finally. So if the audio is a little weird, that's the reason why. But we have a great show lined up, and we are starting off with a good friend and guitar player extraordinaire, William Carlos Reyes. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing great. Thank you.
Do you like the Carlos in there, or should I just call you William Reyes?
Oh, I've been going by William Carlos Reyes for a bit, so you can leave it. But you don't have to say all three names every time you speak to me.
What if I want to, Mr. William Carlos Reyes?
Well, you can.
How are you doing? How's things?
Things are good. Things are good. Playing lots of music, learning different music. Writing different music, arranging music, meeting musicians, traveling, friends are good, family's good, my diet's not too good.
Oh, I know that. I can sympathize with the diet. You know me well enough.
But I'm good, man. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's a little stressful with the move, but it's going to be a process, I'm sure. But I'm here, you're here, things are good, and you just put out an album.
Yes, I did. Scarlet Moon Records did, and they produced it. But I guess you could say I put it out too.
Well, yeah, you're the musician, so you're the one who did, you know, all the work.
I did do a lot of work, but I definitely had a good team behind me, support from people like Mustin and Jason. So yeah, all together we sort of put this album out, and he has all kinds of people that he had do the art and help do videos, and he talked to a lot of people on different websites and things like that. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
So tell me, what is the album? What should people be checking out?
What is the album? The album is some selected music from Final Fantasy IV. They are guitar arrangements that I did over the course of about a year. And most of them are for like 3 guitars to 7 guitars.
Oh, wow.
A couple of them are less than that. One of them is just 1 guitar. But really, we sort of chose the music because some of them were a couple favorites of Jason's, and some of them were just ones that I thought were really pretty, that I thought could go work really well for a guitar ensemble. So that's what this album is. It's kind of a chill album, a lot of interesting arrangements. Some of them though are try to stay true to the original. A couple of them sort of go a little bit outside. But overall, I think they, to the people who like the music from that game, I think they do a pretty good tribute.
Nice. Now, this is your first solo album, right? Because I know you've done so much work with the 1UPs. You released the album with the Altered Beasts, or you are part of the Altered Beasts. This is your mm-hmm. first solo, correct?
This is my first solo album. Yes.
How's it feel to put out a solo album?
Oh, it feels great. I've always loved working with my teams, you know, with being on recordings with not only the 1UPs, but a lot of other people just over the years. But it does give me a sense of pride to think whenever I listen to this album, I'm like, wow, I did a lot of work on this. And musically, it all came from inside of me. Although I love collaborating with other people, it's also nice to just express yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So it's great. It's a great feeling. I'm happy about it.
What made you go with Final Fantasy IV? What was the decision to decide, you know, time to put out a solo album, I'm going to make it all about Final Fantasy IV?
Oh, that was not so much my mind working as it was Jason's. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to do some arrangements of video game music for a long time. Of just ensemble things, like two or three guitars, maybe four guitars. And I had done a few here and there and turned them in for different projects, different other people's compilations and things like that. And so I really enjoyed doing that. But Jason was the one who wanted to do this game and wanted to do... In his mind, he actually had a series in mind, from what I understand, of doing at least 4, 5, and 6, starting number 4, because he loved these piano collections that had come out for Final Fantasy series. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Mm-hmm.
Some really cool stuff, and he likes guitar. And I think he might have approached Mustin and me about this idea of doing this. And so he basically produced it because he had the idea, called us up, hired me to do this, and that is what made this happen. Otherwise, I have a tendency to take my time on things that are just my idea. So I don't know if I would have actually done something like this if it weren't for them approaching me and supporting me.
Is it taking your time in a perfectionist way or in a procrastination kind of way?
Well, when it comes to working for somebody else, it's a perfectionist thing. When it comes to working for just myself, it's both. So, yeah. I tried not to procrastinate when it came to this project. There were some times where I had things come up. It's not quite the same. But yeah, I was a perfectionist with certain aspects, but the other thing is I was learning a lot along the way, especially in regards to recording. But yeah, again, it wasn't, I didn't search out Final Fantasy IV specifically, although I had heard a lot of Final Fantasy music and I had played a lot of Final Fantasy music from this game and other games, just being in the 1UPs for such a long time, I guess 17 years or whatever.
Wow, has it really been that long?
I know, it's weird, huh?
Oh,
maybe
crap.
16. But yeah, we had gone through, we've gone through so much music, just rehearsing, and I don't know, there's like hours and hours of music that we just sort of went through, tried it, and ended up putting it aside, thinking maybe we'll do this later, or maybe someday I could go on an album. So I was familiar with some of the music. But no, I did not specifically go, I need to do Final Fantasy IV. I just went, I need to do an album of guitar music. And Jason was like, hey, you need to do Final Fantasy IV. And I was like, all right, here we go. That's how that happened.
It's a good way for things to come together.
It is. You know, a team is like the best way to get things done.
A team, and you did all the legwork with the music.
Well, yeah.
Jason did the planning, you did the work.
The music work, yes.
Yeah.
But he did a lot of other stuff on the other side.
Oh, I know. He's a busy dude.
Yeah.
So yeah. Who came to pick which tracks were going on the album? Was it you? Was it him? Was it a collaboration there?
It was a collaboration. I mean, I think that he gave me the freedom to choose most of the ones that I liked. I was like, that one's really pretty. I want to do it. I didn't care so much about if it was popular or if it was obscure. I was like, that's a cool song. I think it would work well on guitar. And then his input was was actually good when it came to, hey, well, there should probably be a fight song. You should probably do the main theme. And he had his favorite song, and he had a couple of favorites that, you know, after we picked a few of them, I was like, what about this as the list? And he was like, hey, can we substitute this one for that one? I was like, sure, that's cool. Because some of them I apparently don't get played often by other people. They don't get covered much. They don't get as much love.
Like, so, which ones?
I think the Golbeza one, I don't know how to pronounce it. Is that how you pronounce it?
I always thought it was Golbez.
Well, there was I thought that too, but they put an A at the end of it, and I was like, is that really how? Whatever.
Maybe in the original game, maybe it was changed for the American release, and I'm just a stupid American who follows what we had in Final Fantasy II.
Well, I am definitely American, but so I understand. But that one, I think, I don't know. They wanted me to do that one. Jason wanted me to do that one. I was like, okay, that's cool. There was like 50 emails, to be honest, of like.
Oh, wow.
Some of them were short, though. Like, oh, yeah, cool. Hey, that's cool. Hey, what about this? Hey, and here's the list. Okay, what's the list? And then actually, he did something interesting. He sent me an email sort of describing what was happening in the game for each individual song that was selected so that I could get into the mode, because I had not played this game when I first started listening to this music. So he gave me sort of a background paragraph for each one in hopes that
kind of give you inspiration on how the exactly. song should be.
Draw from it, yeah. And some of it, I think, helped a lot, because whenever I arrange a song, depending on what the who's going to play it or what the purpose is. Like if it's for the one-ups, when I arrange a song for the one-ups, it's a completely different approach than when I would arrange something just me for like this album.
What kind of differences are there in the process?
Well, so for instance, when I'm arranging for the one-ups, you do have to keep all the instruments in mind. So you can't just, the other thing is, besides just the instrumentation, you have to think about, at least I like to think about the audience. I like to think about the energy for a live show. I like to think about the fun that my colleagues would have in playing it. So you come up with ideas that are, that fit well for the stage, that you know your bandmates can all get together and like, because that's a huge one. If two people don't like the song, it won't get played. Thinking about, well, the drum beat should be like this. And, you know, whenever I'm doing stuff for this album, the solo album, I don't need to think about the drums. I don't need to think about, you know, necessarily the groove at all. Because this album is more about, for me, it's more about feeling instead of dancing. And it doesn't really matter what you want to dance to or whatever. It doesn't really matter to me for this album. It's more like, how do I feel about, how can I convey the feeling of this song with just the limitation of guitars, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe the process. I actually haven't been asked to describe the process before, so this kind of, don't know if this is making a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
I'm staring out the window as I talk to you about it too. Looking at the trees.
What's going on outside?
Just some trees.
That's it.
Yeah, but I'm trying to express how I actually, the differences, like you asked. It's a really good question. It's a very good question. But for instance, if I want to get real dark, or, you know, if I want to get real dark in an arrangement that I'm doing just myself, I'm allowed to do that. I'm allowed to do anything as long as I'm sort of staying true to the song. I can throw in sections of my own where I can compose things, and I can do that also in the one-ups too, but there doesn't need to be any groove. There doesn't. I can slow down any time I want. I can get empty. I can get more full, and I can have a part that has 10 guitars if I want to, or just a part that only has one. And I guess you can do that with a band, but the band sort of is like a train. Whenever you're playing, it sort of needs to be. It has to keep going. Or it's like, I don't have to do that with this. I don't know. To be honest, there's a huge list of differences, but being on the spot right now, I can't really think of all the specific ways. So,
how about this? I mentioned The Altered Beasts. That was a guitar duo album that you put out with Tim Yarbrough. What kind of differences are there between doing a solo guitar album and a duo guitar album?
Well, whenever you say solo, okay, so I'll say this. The album is, it could be, it's hard to say solo album. A lot of people will think it's a solo guitar album, when in reality it's not. It's my solo album, meaning I did it alone, me, but it's definitely not solo guitar.
No.
It's, you know, on average five guitars per song. And even if they're doing a stupid little part like bee 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 bee, and in the background you can't really hear it, you don't really care, that fifth guitar is still there. The two guitars, it's nice to have that limitation sometimes. It's like if you only get to paint a picture with blue and white, you know, what can you paint a nice picture with just those two colors? And yeah, you can. Whenever you start getting more instruments and more freedoms and things like that, then your palette gets bigger too. And you can, of course, make something look a lot cooler. But I love the challenge of just two guitars, for instance, me and Tim, knowing our strengths and knowing, you know, that we could possibly do this live anywhere we want to, as long as our arrangement is not super complex. So you think about the strengths and weaknesses of each person. You think about, again, just like with anytime you're collaborating, what would be fun to do for the other person so you're not completely selfish. Like, I want you to do this, and that's it. That's all you're going to do this, and you're going to do what I say. No, it's more like, hey, would you have fun doing this song? Also with song selection. It's like whenever we were arranging, I was like, hey, let's do 10 songs. You pick five and I pick five. We arrange our five. We get together. We rehearse it. Boom, go. You know, so that's kind of a cool process. So you don't have to just like, I'm going to pick every single song, you know. But yeah. Plus we were going for a jazz thing where it was like, we arranged the song to be like a jazz chart, you know, in the jazz world is just like a page of the song, sometimes two pages, but just like, here are the chords, here's the melody, you know. You can do a reharmonization, or you can change the melody slightly, you can change the feel, you can make it a Latin, you can make it a swing, you can make it funky sounding or whatever, and then we kind of improvise, we solo, we take turns, you know, we come back to the head, which is just the main melody again, throw an intro and outro on there, the song's done. So, not to put it down or anything, but it's a little bit more simple. It's a little bit more formulaic, although not always, when you're arranging jazz charts. It can still be just as simple, as complex as you want it to be. But a lot of those rely on interesting reharmonizations along with cool solos in the middle, whereas these ensembles are more like you're trying to get all the parts that are there, because a lot of times these songs sound as if like the Final Fantasy IV songs, so they sound as if they would kind of work well with a kind of a small chamber orchestra. So you want, at least I wanted to try to capture a lot of those little bitty parts that are happening. Not verbatim, but, but at least so you get the idea. And, I think Jason might have wanted one or two guitars just for this album initially, but I think I convinced him for it to be at least 3 to 5 on most songs because I was missing some of that music that was happening. It's different from piano where you have 10 fingers, 10 notes that you can kind of do. On guitar, you're limited more, even though there are other, you can be very expressive on it. It is like a miniature orchestra itself. I felt like I needed to have a lot more going on for the songs
to have a more full sound.
Yeah, to do the songs justice, to do the composer justice, more importantly. Because I didn't want to take away, if I was going to do a solo guitar thing, I would have had to take away a lot of stuff that I loved in the music, a lot of little parts that happen that maybe the average person doesn't pay attention to fully, but I loved them. And I was like, that is like, those little things make this song cooler, make this song stand out more so than just your chords and your melody. Even though you totally can do that, I just wanted more.
Yeah. With having more parts, was there ever any consideration in working with other people on this? Or was this always intended to be just a one-man project?
Can you say that again?
Was there ever any thought of working with other people, other musicians on this? Or was this always intended to be just a one-man project?
This was always intended to be a one-man project. Not to sound selfish or anything. It's just that this is just something I love to do. I've been, ever since, even on the 1UP's first album, you know, as a kid, and then I know it's gross. I loved arranging songs for guitar and putting them on guitar. And in the second album, I think my first ensemble VGM arrangement was a Castlevania prelude. And, I was like, this is so much fun, you know, take this. And so I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I've been doing things with other people, like the Chronicles of, what was it called? Chronicles of the Chrono Trigger album, I forget the name, I'm so sorry.
Oh, God. Do you know,
The compilation album that had like 100+ musicians on it.
Was it Chronicles of Time?
That's the one.
Is that
Chronicles of Time. Chronicles of Time. The Secret of Mana one. Spectrum of Mana.
Yeah.
And several of these Dance Macabre's that, these Halloween albums.
Oh, that Viking Guitar puts out.
Yeah, Christmas albums, and even the Dwelling of Duels stuff. I've been doing these arrangements for a guitar ensemble for a long time. So whenever this project came up, I didn't want to use other musicians. I was like, I wanna do this. I wanna challenge myself to do it all myself, and because I've been loving doing this for a while and never really put an album together. It's just sort of like sprinkles of songs here and there spread throughout. Never concentrate.
A bunch of singles and you never had that full album.
Correct. So that's why I was like, okay, it's time for me to do this.
So what are some of the standouts from the album, you think? What are some of your favorites?
What's on this album? I think one of my favorites started off being one of my least favorites, which is cool. Everyone's going to have their own opinion on their favorites. So my favorites are not, I don't expect them to be anyone else's favorites because, you know, you t- take your musical interpretation and you feel what you want to feel and you like whatever you want to like. But I personally like what I did with Fight 2.
Yes, I love that one.
And when I heard it, I was like, I wasn't super crazy about the song. And I arranged it, and it's kind of funny because Mussin and Jason were like, that's it? I was like, yeah, that's your Fight 2. And they were like, why don't you do a little something else? You know, make this. And I was like, okay, because I didn't have the whole second part of it. And I think the intro wasn't even that there. It was just like the Fight 2. You know, kind of fast and like in your face. I was like, all right, fine. So I took a lot of liberty with like that second part of it when it got all dark and weird and slower. And I was like, oh man, this is fun. And I had I had so much fun just like saying no to the, let me say that better. I had so much fun going against the normal feel. Like I'd forgotten that I have the freedom to do that. And so I kind of sort of stretched that out a bit. And also at the time I had already recorded several of them and I had gotten a little better at recording an acoustic guitar with my equipment and everything. So it also sounds better. So I liked that too. But another one that stood out for me was Illusionary World. I just thought that one was really dark and creepy and just, it gives me a cool feeling when I hear it. but honestly, I really like all of them. As far as stand out, those two stand out the most. Oh, I took a lot of liberties with Golbez as well. I added some Bach sounding things in the middle that I felt would fit in really well with what the composer wrote. And I just was like, well, I'm not going to have permission for this. I'm just going to throw it in there. And it turned out to be really nice. It gives me a good feeling when I hear it. Takes me back to, like, I don't know, thinking about the classical music that I studied. But they're all kind of little. I worked hard on all of them, so they all feel a little. I'm attached to each of them. Even
they're
the one
all your
wrote,
children.
They are. I had 12 babies, and but I also think that, you know, the main ones, like the love theme, you know, it's just a beautiful theme. You can't deny it. Rydia, or I think that's how you pronounce it.
That's how I've always said it.
Super pretty. It's just a pretty song. So it's like those stand out for their own reasons because they're just really beautiful, really beautiful tunes. So that was fun too. Just like, it's nice to play really pretty music, you know?
Yeah. And Final Fantasy IV had such an amazing soundtrack, which is evident with this release.
Oh, thanks. The hard part, though, is that there is a ton of music.
Yeah, you were saying that you had a list, and Jason was like, how about this one instead of this one? Which songs did you want to cover that you weren't able to? And are you going to cover them eventually?
That's a good question. I think that I don't know about covering them eventually. That might be a different project, because I think depending on the success of this one, that will sort of determine how we go about number 5 and number 6. So I think that would be the next level. But as far as the songs that I wanted to do, I do not remember. It was a while ago. I just remember liking certain ones. I don't remember their titles. But I think one of them was a really popular one that was like overdone, or I don't know, overdone if in the, I don't know if it was overdone or if it was just a lot of people had done it and he wanted something that hadn't been done. So I don't really remember. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You mentioned the 5 and 6. Are you going to be a part of those? Are those going to be your projects as well?
That is the plan right now. Again, it's it depends on how the success of this one goes. But these are Jason's, these are his, he really wants to do this. And I think that I can do it really well. So I think he's happy with working with me on these. So we just have to wait and see how many people buy this, you know, number four.
Yeah. What's the reception been so far? Have people been digging it?
The people who I have seen comments from have all enjoyed it. A lot of them are my friends, and I love that. It makes me feel great. I actually am looking forward to someone not liking it. You know, that sounds really weird. I'm a little bit of the opposite of a lot of people in that regard.
You're looking for the critiques and what you can improve.
I am. Everyone is entitled. As soon as I put something out there, anyone can tear it up or praise it however they want. And I don't get too offended, nor do I fall in love too easily with these comments. And I don't want to have a big ego about it. I want to hear what they think. But I want to know what they really think as well. And I'm not saying anything bad about my friends. I love my friends. But they do tend to be really nice. And I'm not saying I don't believe them either. But I'm curious if some of them hated something, if they would even tell me. I'd hope that they would. Because there are some things that I hated about or didn't hate, but just like things I could have done better, for sure. On this album, but that's part of the learning process. But yeah, the response has been, I got away from your question there. I tend to ramble on.
That's all good.
The response has been good, to answer your question. If you want to cut all that other stuff out, or you can leave it in.
I'm way too lazy to cut things out.
All right. The response has been very good, and I'm very grateful. But I still want someone out there to not be afraid to tear it up if they want to.
Yeah. Well, I hope you find someone to tear it up just to make you happy.
There has to be someone that hates it.
If any of our listeners check out the album and don't like it, make sure to email us and let us know why, and we will forward your message on.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Oh, man. So, on a personal level, what are you playing these days? Do you have time to play games these days?
I do not have a lot of time to play games, unfortunately. When I do play games, there is a nice little... There's an arcade that's in my town. A retro arcade. You pay $5 to get in, and you play all their arcades as long as you want.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And I'm friends with the owner, and so he doesn't even charge me anymore.
Oh, man.
That's when I need, like, I gotta go play some games. You know, it's like, I'll go play some games there, you know? But as far as,
you're saying I need to visit you sometime soon so I could go check this place out.
Yeah, if you like arcades and stuff, like, I'm sure you do, because that's what I kind of grew up on, that and the old Nintendo and Super Nintendo.
Hell yeah, man.
I didn't have a lot of the... I wasn't blessed with these other systems, these other consoles. And they kept getting better and better and better, and I kept falling more and more behind. So I kind of just stayed happy with playing the old ones. But yeah, that's what I do, and I don't spend all day there by any means, but it is fun to hang out and just beat people up in an arcade.
I just imagine you like waiting in the bathroom for someone to come in and you beat them up for their lunch money.
No, I'm pacifist. I let all that out in the game. I don't have I don't have the newest games, and I don't. They're really wonderful, though. I've seen people play them. I'm like, wow, that is amazing. They look so amazing. The music is so amazing. The gameplay is so amazing. I'm like, if I didn't have all these other things to do, I could easily be addicted to some of these new games and just play them every day, all day, and just be totally cool. But I don't, because I know that I'm not going to get things done because they're so cool, you know?
And just fall into that trap.
Yeah, it's fun. And a lot of them are so involved that it's hard to just like, oh, I'll just play for a few minutes. And yeah, that's kind of why I like arcades. So I'm like, yeah, I'll play this for a little bit. And then, you know, I die a million times. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm kind of done with this. Some of these other ones are so involved, you can get lost. 10 hours go by, and you're like, oh, man.
Oh, it's Thursday. Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think I'm the only one that feels that way. A lot of people feel that way with some of these games. So
I've definitely been there.
Yeah, a lot of my friends have. And I've even done a little bit of that back in the day.
So how are you keeping yourself busy these days? Live shows?
I do a lot of things. I do live shows. I have a lot of other musicians that I work with. Some of these are events that the city puts on. Some of them are they're events that corporate parties events. Some of them are weddings. Some of them are shows. And then I have to practice for all of them. So a lot of my, you know, I have to prepare for all. And they're not always the same music. A lot of times they're very different music. So it's a lot of different music I have to practice at home. Different styles, different songs, long list of songs. Aside from that, I still like to have fun and travel. Travel around, hang out with people when I can. I have family in Mexico. I have family in Chile. I have friends in Europe and all around the U.S. And then another thing that I like to do that I spend my time on is I've been trying to get into more composing and more independent filmmaking. So I'm gathering. Yeah. So I'm gathering, trying to get a team of people together so that we can make films, which is a huge endeavor. But it's super fun, and it's hard. It's a nice challenge, but it does take a lot of time. You plan pre-production, get the people together, shoot it, edit it, all that stuff. It's big. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And, go ahead.
Gotta say, I've known you for well over 15 years now, and I had no idea you were into filmmaking. That's cool to hear.
I thought it was a pipe dream because I was told that by people around me. So I never was like, eh. I mean, I always thought, nah, that's okay. I don't need to get into that. But now that I'm older, I'm like, I don't care. And yeah, I've always loved films. I think my passion for films is almost as much as my passion for music. So learning the process of it has been very educational, very, very fun, very awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always knew you were a movie buff. I just never knew that you were into actual movie making. So that's really cool to hear.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I wasn't, because I didn't believe that you could. I didn't think that I could. I was like, I'll never be able to do that. And then it's like, yeah, you can. Just do it. Don't be afraid. If you love it, just do it.
When you have your first big Hollywood premiere, I hope I get an invite.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you gotta stay positive. That's gonna happen, man. It'll happen for you.
I am positive. I'm trying to stay positive. What I really, my focus is on learning how to do it and creating good work regardless of the production value, just something that speaks to people. I'm not really, don't really care about fame, don't really care about big time this or big time that. I just, whether it's music or movies or writing or anything, I just want to sort of inspire some people out there, make them feel something cool.
That's really awesome.
Thanks.
Well, you know, I can't have you on without asking, what's in the future for the 1UPs?
The 1UPs have some cool things happening. We have put together a list of songs for a new album.
Yes.
Some of the recordings are underway. Some of them, I don't think we have the complete list picked out, but we have at least 75% of the songs picked out that we're trying to do. Most of those are pretty well arranged. We've sort of been up and down with ideas over the past couple of years. That's true. We do have some upcoming shows, although I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything yet, so I won't. But we have some upcoming shows. I think we're just going to keep on trucking. I don't think there's any plan to quit. I think that we are just focusing on trying to get these songs together, trying to get them to sound good, record them, release them, and do the shows that we get invited to, just like always. It is a little harder, I think, now as people get more... Well, as people get older, they're doing other things. So I don't think the 1UPs is like a number one priority for everyone. Like at one point, I think it was. However, it definitely is a priority of some sort, and it is something that we all love doing. And I don't think we're gonna quit ever, really.
That is very good to hear, because I've been there the whole trip for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
From MAGFest 1 until now, I've been always in the corner of the 1UPs, and I'm excited to see you guys still going.
Cool, man. Well, thanks. And your support means a lot. It has always been there. We've been through many years of funny things. It's weird to just chuckle about it and just keep it to ourselves, but some of these stories, man, they shouldn't be on the air. You know.
Yeah, we'll have to save that for another show.
We'll save that for when we're super old and it's like, oh, here's what we did. It was so weird. But anyway.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about with the album or with whatever you're doing in life?
This is hard on the spot. I think... Well, I do want to express how grateful I am to the people who are listening to the album. Even if they don't know who I am, that's fine. That indirect support means the world. It is not easy. Well, in some ways it is easy to make these albums happen. Because it's like, oh, this is fun. I love music, and people listening to it really makes it worthwhile. But it's hard too, because it's like you musicians, and well, I don't know if all they're all like this, but we do criticize ourselves. We're our own worst critics sometimes, and we want things to go well. We want people to love our music. You know, ultimately we do. So yes, I'm very grateful to Scarlet Moon Records for sort of reaching out and giving me that opportunity. I feel like I was sort of just kind of wandering around, but that gave me some direction. So I'm very grateful. And, so yeah, as far as my life goes, the really only important thing people well, that I would want people to know is that I am always trying to be creative. I'm always trying to put out more music, more, you know, in the future, maybe films. And I'm loving life. I will say that.
It's good to love life.
It is. I'm a pretty happy place right now.
It's good to hear, man. So. It is always good seeing you happy. It is always good chatting with you. William, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking with you too, bro.
Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break, listen to some music from Final Fantasy IV Guitar Collections. We'll be back with more show in a little bit. William, do you have any final words to wrap this up? Putting you on the spot one more time.
Yeah. Be good to one another. That's it.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to William for coming on and chatting about the new album. You got to go check that out. Really good stuff. Guitar Collections, Final Fantasy IV. Really, really, really good stuff. We do have some reviews we got to take care of. Leading things off, as usual, Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I'm exhausted and tired, but fun. Fun. Rainy season in effect this summer. How are you
God.
Doing?
I am exhausted as well, and I'm also concerned because all the rain here is starting to flood areas.
And, your area is flood? Gets flood?
Well, where I live doesn't flood because it's really, really high up, but I live right along the Susquehanna River, so there is flooding in the area.
Oh, man. So that means, like, just blocked roads and the like, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, good stuff.
That's some, on the positive, at least you can just kind of drive around that. But if it was coming up to your front door, oh, that's a reason to sweat bullets.
Yeah, if the water ever comes to our front door, call Noah.
Send your pictures to him, at least.
Yeah. You would need to get an ark to get the fuck out of here.
Well, if I just made that reference, I'm wagering that maybe no one that listens to the show knew what I was talking about.
Probably not.
For shame. All you guys need to be older. Get older!
Anyway, you got two games to talk about tonight. You ready to get to this?
Let's dance, dance, dance.
Cool. And again, if people hear a weird reverb on my voice, it's because the new room I have moved into doesn't have enough shit on the walls yet. So I'm getting a little bit of a reverb, a little bit of an echo. So apologies for that. And I really don't care if it bothers you.
How do you apologize and then say you don't care?
Because I'm an asshole.
But that's like half asshole, half sincere. It's like, hey guys, I'm so sorry. Fuck you anyway. It's like, what? But you were in the middle of an apology. Yeah, I changed my mind.
I should use that for the next business card I do. The SML podcast, half asshole, half sincere.
He cares because shut up. That's why.
We care because fuck you.
I don't know what to make of this. I'm so scared.
I'm sleep deprived. Hooray. Anyway, first game to talk about tonight is called Aces of the Luftwaffe Squadron, developed and published by Handy Games, released July 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. When Europe seemed to be freed, a secret German commando called the Aces of the Luftwaffe took their chance to strike back and invade the USA. It's your duty to restore peace and liberty by climbing aboard deadly wings of steel and fight against their fearsome war machines in bombastic air battles. Command your wingmen, fight as a team, fight as a squadron. Purnell, what is this game?
It's honestly not so bad. It's pretty decent. It reminds me of a general classic arcade shmup game. And the idea is that you are controlling a squadron of four planes. If you are playing in single player, you are in control of four planes who fly as a formation. Whereas in multiplayer, you each can control one of the different planes, or maybe I think a combination of them. I'm not sure because I never played with more than like, I never played with other people. I just know that's how it works. Anyway, when you're flying in formation, the unfortunate component to this is that all the ships take their own individual damage. So while you're being attacked, think like 1942 or 43, one of those games, as the German ships are flying down and attacking you, as your planes take damage, they can eventually go down. If they go down, they'll stay away for maybe like a minute, and then they'll fly back like, hey, man, back to the action. So it's almost like a moot penalty if one of your subplanes gets shot down. If you get shot down, the main plane, however, it counts as a life. If you lose all four lives, you're dead for the stage. You're never going to do that, though, unless maybe you're playing on insane difficulty, because the game is more about getting a high score on the normal and hard difficulties than actually facing any real sort of challenge. As you play the game, you will blast different enemies that will release a variety of items. Some will be weapons, such as like a flamethrower or an electric bullet sort of thing, or just a laser even. And when you pick those up, unfortunately, you can't switch between different weapons. You'll just fire the weapon you're holding until you run out of ammo. And due to the way that weapons show up on the screen, unless I miss something, you can't tell what weapon you're picking up. You'll just get the emergency crate that drops when an enemy gets destroyed, and bam, there's a weapon. You got one. Also, you can get upgrades to your basic gun as well as your missile gun, which will result in more heavy firepower as you're firing off your homing lib missiles or your pea shooters that come from either your ship when you're out of firepower or from your squadron. Also, the game actually surprisingly has a skill system to it. So as you play through stages, every stage will have one or more secret coins hidden on it. And if you find that coin, then you'll get a skill point, which you can use to level up your ship. In addition to that, every level has a secret mission. It's a side mission. I won't say secret because they tell you what the hell it is, but it's a side mission. And it can range from anything from deliver supplies to units on the ground, which involves your ship hovering over icons until a gauge fills up, or not getting hit a certain number of times till you can blow up a target. So, like, basically, if you get shot too many times, the target gets away. So, it's like a chase sequence. Or another one might be just shoot the specified targets that show up on the screen to make sure none of them get away. And other secure other ones that I'm not going to spoil, because there's a lot of surprisingly interesting little side missions in the game. But they also reward you with secret coins that can be used to enhance your skill points. And lastly, as you blow stuff up, they will drop little medals. If you've played like Gigawing 2, for example, or some of those games, think of those like the medals just kind of flying to your ship, but you have to actually pick these up individually. But at the end of every stage, the number of medals you picked up goes to an experience points bar. Every time you level up, you'll also get more skill points. Burp, burp, burp. And every ship, all four pilots, has their own skill tree. And the skill tree items involve anything from like getting additional hit points to chances of dodging bullets to other things such as active attacks, such as like a bomb that, you know, is like a screen clearing bomb, or another item which will allow you to envelop yourself in an aura that heals your, repairs your ships, stuff like that. And you can kind of, you're supposed to be able to switch between them, but I never quite pulled that off with my trigger buttons. And the screen tells you hit L1 and R1, switch between those active items, but I never pulled that off properly. I just said, screw it, air bomb it is.
Nice.
Odd thing that they chose to do with this game, though, really odd, and it's going to generate mixed feelings depending on who's playing. Though I don't think I've really found a person who's liked it gameplay-wise yet, but it's a surprisingly creative thing nonetheless. Every member of your squadron has some sort of phobia or mental issue or health illness. Like, for example, the starting main character, whose name is Mark Taylor, he has poison in his blood because he was poisoned as a child or something, and it never got taken out of his system. So at certain points, he'll get sick from the poison, and while he's affected, he can only fly slowly. He has to fly slowly until the poison is out of his system, or he will die. There's another character named Melissa, who, oddly enough, is afraid of heights. So every once in a while, the stage, you'll be asked to, you know, ascend. It's all story generated. It's not like you tell yourself to ascend, but the game will have your story, your characters ascend, and when that happens, she'll get freaked out, and then she'll just disappear. She'll leave, and you're stuck with the other three pilots, and she's not helping. Another pilot gets angry, just has anger management issues, and when it kicks in, he starts flying around, shooting at all kinds of stuff, and he'll crash into you, too, if you're not careful. So you're basically dodging the enemies, the bullets, and your fellows on wingman in hopes of not killing you. And the funniest one, next to probably the person who's afraid of heights, that's a pilot, is the last one, my boy Steve, black man. He's narcoleptic, and sometimes he'll just fall asleep while he's flying the plane.
Oh, Jesus.
And when that happens, he's just stationary, or he'll just kind of sway here and there, and you have to protect him and keep him from getting shot with bullets or getting hit with planes. I think the game is scripted so that bullets won't hit him, but other planes definitely will. You have to knock them out of the sky before they collide with him, or missiles collide with him. So it's an odd little concept, but it's a creative odd little concept. So I don't want to fault it too much for that, but I will say when those things occur, they will annoy you. I think they were intended to annoy you, though, so they kind of served their purpose. I can't imagine a game being like, you know what people would think would be fun? A poisoned pilot who can't fly very quickly and a shmup.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a hindrance. So if you're frustrated by it, guess what? I think that's mission accomplished on the part of the developers. So. also, there's like some pretty colorful boss encounters where, because everybody's voiced, all the characters and the bosses are voiced, and I'm not going to say they deserve like, you know, A+ for voices, because there's some pretty bad voiceovers, or just mediocre at best voiceovers.
Well, they were all done in-house. I was asked not to be too harsh on the voice acting, because it was all done in-house, so.
Oh, crap, edit this out, then. I don't want to be that jerk. I mean, it makes sense, though, because now that you say it was done in-house, it all makes sense. Just like back in the day when people were like, who voiced this Sega CD game? Well, they got the janitor and some of the programmers and the head developer's niece to come in, and they all just said a few lines and then had a piece of
it. See, it comes back to the I care, but fuck you, because I care because I'm letting you know not to be harsh on it, but fuck you because I'm not going to edit that out.
Oh, why would you? But, oh, well. Sorry, guys. I noticed the voices. Joe doesn't want to edit it out. I can't help it. But what I will say is that despite or in lieu of the voices, I still enjoyed the game. I had fun playing it. I mean, like I said, maybe on the hardest difficulty it might do more for me, but on the normal and hard difficulties, I wasn't really challenged, but I'm okay with that. I was more about just trying to get high scores and level up my planes and just see what the game has to offer and just kind of enjoy it for what it is. One thing I never even pulled off, though, maybe because I just didn't, you know, do hard enough, but when you beat, there's also one other component to the game, which is the you can unlock new planes to put your pilots in. But there are random drops from bosses, and the harder the difficulty that you're fighting them on, the more likely they are to drop this new plane. And planes have stats. Like, they're not crazy stats, but, like, for example, my mom might say, like, you know, take 10% additional critical damage when you shoot guys and get crits on them, or you'll take, like, more damage from a specific elemental type of attacks off an enemy uses laser attacks, and your ship is weak to laser damage. Whoa, you're in trouble. But you can unlock that stuff too. One fault I did find, though, this game did unfortunately have a fault that it could have just been my system, but hopefully they'll hear this and address it. But when you're trying to scroll through the main menu, it delays. I don't know how to, it's like, have you ever played a game like that where you push a button and then you want to press it again to go like make another scroll, but it just won't do anything?
That's weird.
Yeah, like, I would push the button, like, okay, let me scroll down this menu to get to the bottom and make an option select, but I'll push it once, and then the game will move the icon, and then I'll have to wait, like, 10 seconds before I can push down again until I eventually get to where I want to go, then wait another 10 seconds, and then press X. I tried going back to the main menu of my PlayStation and scrolling around. There was no delay or lag on my system. I was wired to the PS4 itself. So there wasn't like it was the wireless that was acting up. I just don't know what was causing it, and it's strange. It was
that
only
is
happening.
Odd.
Yeah, maybe it's something to do with like just how they wired it. I mean, the game hasn't released yet, right?
By when we're recording it, it comes out the following day, so it's very possible this is something that's being addressed in a patch.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask, because it's very possible that other people won't experience this, or the developer can address it themselves and let us know. But that was something that I unfortunately noticed. When you're playing the game proper, none of this is an issue. It's only in the menus for some reason.
Yeah, so it's very possible this is something they either know about and it's already addressed, or now they're finding out about and they'll be able to address it. So,
yeah, you guys got to knock coin. That down, because the game is fun. Don't get me ruined by a stupid menu system issue.
Yeah, I agree. But $15 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think it's a fun game. Definitely worth the money. $15, I'd say it's probably, I think it's a buy it game. Minimal try, but I would buy it if you like shmups and you're, definitely if you like shmups and you're kind of feeling daunted by all the $40 and $50 like arcade release shmups, you can get this one on the cheap, and it's honestly a fun game.
Awesome, good stuff. You got one other game to talk about, that is called VSR Void Space Racing. Developed and published by Sonka, released July 20th on the Switch for $9.99. If you're looking for your generic futuristic racer, look for it elsewhere. This game is not for the faint of heart. Impactful and challenging, VSR Void Space Racing gives you the opportunity to fly through vast and diverse locations in outer space and prove yourself worthy of the first place. Pernell, what is VSR?
A racing game where you will not get first place. I can tell you that much. If they got one thing right in that fluff text, it is that this game is challenging, and it may well be to its detriment, in my opinion. I hate being that guy. I really freaking do. You know the type. He does a review for a game, and he's like, I suck at your game. And then all the guys go on the internet and go, that guy just sucks at video games. That doesn't mean anything. Well, for anybody who's preparing to say that about me, fuck you too, because guess what? I am good at video games, and this game just wasn't doing it. To give you an idea of what I'm talking about, the idea of the game is that it's a free-floating racing game. You are actually in space. There is no friction. There is no gravity. So if you propel yourself and then stop propelling yourself, you will continue to float the direction that you were originally going in, because that's how space works. So how does this game work? There are no tracks. It's just a free-floating space environment. And the game creates the track and by giving you rings to fly through. Think like pilot wings or something like that. So you have to propel yourself through a series of rings. And they always show you the first ring you have to go through and then the ring that's going to follow that one. My guess is that you can kind of prepare yourself to get from 1 to 2 in as best a way as possible. The problem is, good fucking luck doing that well. So, you might be thinking to yourself, well, just use the tutorial printout, not a big deal. All right, you know what the tutorial is? It dumps you in a free-floating environment with some obstacles and says, this is a no-friction racing game. Press the up button when you're ready to try. And in the meantime, it just tells you what the buttons do. So you have propel, you have brake, you have tilt left and tilt right, which admittedly, I never quite nailed those as far as good usage for playing the game. I was utilizing, like, okay, I know what tilting left does and what tilting right does, but it wasn't functioning how I would expect it to, because I think it's just, it makes your ship spin. But how to make the use of that to correct myself on some of these turns, I have no idea. Because it's not like, don't think like a racing game where you're tilting left or tilting right. Think of a circular object that's tilting, which means it will roll. Like barrel roll, but not like Star Fox barrel roll. So what ends up happening is you're playing the demo and you're using, like, okay, I got the buttons. I figured out the buttons. I'm ready to see what the rest of the tutorial is. So you press the button and then it just says, there's a ring, fly through it. And then that other ring, you'll fly through that next. Ta-da, there's a tutorial.
Oh boy, so it sounds like it could use a better tutorial in it.
Yes, it could. Maybe some racing tips or something. Like, yeah, I get the idea of, you know, maybe stop accelerating so much so that you can kind of coast into, like, changing directions. I get that. You want to know why I get that? Because I actually was able to do the tutorial race. Not tutorial. I was able to do the tutorial pretty decently by the end of it. It was a matter of, okay, accelerate, let go of the gas, maybe brake a little bit, and then as I go through the ring, aim in the new ring and propel towards it. You'll get a bit of a loss of speed, but you'll make it. The problem is when you go to actually play the game, because there's not a ton of content in the game, but it's also only a $9.99 game. There are 3 cars and 8 tracks. You have to unlock the new tracks by getting first on the previous track, and you unlock the new cars by getting first on specific races. You will probably never beat the first race, though.
Oh, God.
So you will never see the other tracks. I am damn near ashamed to admit I never beat the first track. I played for a good 2.5-3 hours, never beat the first track. And that didn't seem like much, but when you're doing the same level over and over again, it may as well have been 10 hours because I got sick. So the cars that you're racing with, even on easy mode, are pretty much flawless drivers. They don't have to do the, oh, kind of decelerate and then turn my ship. No, they just go a straight pattern. They just get it. Vroom, look at this fly. You, on the other hand, are bouncing around like a damn pinball machine in space, bopping off of rock faces or trying to recorrect yourself. You can't keep the momentum that these other races are having. I'm going to wager some freaking pro out there, or maybe the developer can be like, you know, you need to know what you're doing, son. Here's how you really play the game. And you know what? Please link a video to the SML group showing me how to play the game, and I'll give it another shot. And heaven forbid, I'll re-review the game. That's how serious I'm about this, because it's a cool idea. I just couldn't fucking play it.
Jesus.
And it drove me nuts because I'm like, okay, this game could be cool. I can see this working. 8 tracks. One of them based off of Astro Bear's Party, which I actually did like when I played it. You know, I wanted to like it. I just couldn't because it drove me goddamn crazy. Just trying and not accomplishing anything.
Man.
So that's my review of the game.
So it sounds kind of like either a deny it or an undecided for now.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, because I want to say deny it, but undecided in the event that somebody who knows what they're doing steps up and shows me how it's done. But as it is, it's a cool premise, interesting concept, and it's affordable. But you'll be so frustrated trying to get through the first damn stage that you're going to likely give up.
Man.
And I feel like when it comes to a game, even with a new control scheme or whatever, I don't want to say outright, give me the first stage, but it shouldn't be like to the point where you're getting 8th place on the first race on easy difficulty.
Yeah.
I know somebody might call that entitlement or something, but be honest with yourself. Have you ever, can you think of a game you've played in the last 10, 20 years where even easy mode was like, I can't understand how I can't beat this?
Not really, no.
Exactly. Neither can I. I'm a guy who typically goes normal to hard on every game he plays. I can't do this on easy stage one.
Jeez.
And I was trying it. I'm like, oh, I got this. Accelerate. Boom, through the gate. Let off the gas. Brake, maybe. Turn the ship. Shoot up there. New ring deal. Start the race. Why are all these guys better than me? Oh, they're AI. That makes sense. And the worst part is, you might say, well, maybe if you're playing multiplayer, that would be great if you have to unlock the other damn tracks. Because now, you can't enjoy bouncing off the walls with your friends and at least all sucking together, because you can't unlock any stages to do it on, or the other cars.
Jeez.
It's, well, just damn.
Instead of asking a verdict, since you don't really have one right now, what would you do to improve this game?
I would say one of two things. A, make the AI less perfect, which I think would be the least optimal method. Or two, give some actual pointers. No, three things. Okay, second one, change the physics of the game enough so that it flows better as far as like keeping up with the actual traffic in the game itself, the other AI races. Or the third option, add some more info out there, maybe even in game, that just gives you more feedback on the tutorial. Say, do these things to fly your ship better. I mean, after all, it is a tutorial. It is meant to teach you how to play the game. I don't think here's what the menu options look like and some buttons counts as a tutorial. I mean, yeah, some games do that, but usually they always say, hey, press this button to do this. But if you let off a little bit, you can do this and do a super dash, or you can do this and do a better turn, or I don't know, some detail to provide the player with a better idea of how to make use of this frictionless environment to keep up with the opponent. Because again, I was able to do just fine racing alone on the tutorial environment, just getting the feel for it. But when it came time to put it to use against the AI, the AI was doing some shit that, to my understanding, you shouldn't even be able to do in a frictionless environment. They were just like driving, like going left now, going up now, going down. I'm just like, sharp V, 45 degree angle, way out, curly Q squiggles above, anything. Oh my God, I can't wait for the internet rage for this. It's probably coming. But
all I know is, if you cover this game again, if you go back and revisit it, I want you to play it with hard difficulty and see how good you do.
Oh, that would be, I've got a feeling the game won't even let me hit gas to start. It's like, whoa, hard mode. We're just going to let your ship stall in space. There you go. Start it out by going up and jumping your pod. Get another race to help you. Player two? No? Well, you got to wait for one of the ships to make a lap, and then maybe he'll stop and give you a jump.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a bummer to hear, because it sounded really cool. It just seems like lack of tutorial and brutal AI is hurting it.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, even if they just like a patch it and say, okay, maybe we're just too damn good at this game, we're going to make us that it's your ship doesn't veer off so hard. I don't know, which would kind of suck. I know they probably had a vision for the game, like you're supposed to drive it like this, but you know, it was like, If it doesn't work.
Yeah, and I mean, that's happened with developers before, where they get so used to playing the game that they don't realize how difficult it is until gamers have it. And they're like, holy shit, how do you fucking play this game?
Yeah, and you figure there's only four buttons. Like, what is wrong? At first, I thought it was something wrong with me, and I just had to accept that it can't just be me. It has to be more. Like, me playing on hard mode is me going, nah, I just suck at this game. Or me playing on it, just in general. Like, if I've played games where I openly acknowledge I suck at this game, put me in front of Smash Brothers, kiss my ass. I can't play that game for crap, and I love Smash Brothers. But, you know, I've played a lot of challenging games, racing games even, like Sonic and, what is that, Sonic Chrome Team Racing or whatever that game is. Mm-hmm. I think I just made the name of their game that's coming out. But Sonic, you know, Sonic All-Stars, there it is. Sonic All-Stars Racing. That game gets really hard, but I kick ass at it because I know how to drive a freaking auto and I can handle what the game's throwing at me. It's not that I can't do all those different types of games. It's just this game is just no. And F-Zero, there we go. F-Zero X, boom. I'm good at that game too. And that game is brutal, notorious for being hard.
Yeah.
But it's just this game.
Well, my that's pride, a bummer to hear, man.
My
pride. You gotta get good. You gotta get good, scrub.
Get good. Developer, care to show us how it's done?
Well, if they come back and give some tips and some pointers, I'll be sure to pass them on your way, and we'll happily re-review the game and give it another chance if you're able to handle it.
I like that idea.
Good stuff. Well, Purnell, always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Just know that if I end up in the trauma ward tomorrow, it's because I had nightmares about this damn VSR.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Pool Panic, developed by Wreckham, published by Adult Swim Games, released July 19th on the Switch for $14.99. The world's least realistic pool simulator, Pool Panic frees billiards from the table and unleashes it into a world where everything from jungles and deserts to cities and swamps is a living pool game. You already know that sinking eight balls is the ultimate goal, but can you succeed while contending with monster balls chasing you or ballerina balls leaping away from your well-aimed shots? To answer those questions, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. I'm drinking a nice cold soda because it is extremely hot today.
How hot?
We hit a record high today of 115 degrees.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
In every way.
I think right now at 10:30 p.m. when we're recording this, it's like 100 degrees outside still.
Fuck that. What the hell?
So I guess this game is a perfect thing to complement my fever dream of, as I die of heat stroke.
Oh my lord! It makes you want to jump into a pool, huh?
But the but the pools are all evaporated. So instead, I'm inside in the air conditioning playing video games.
Oh, Lord. So how is Pool Panic, though?
Well, Pool Panic, yeah. This one is a really interesting one. I want to say this is probably the first Adult Swim game that I've played. Which, you know, I'd been paying attention to them because they were going to be the publisher of the new Toe Jam and Earl game. But they've, I guess it went back to being completely indie, so that's cool. But so like the show that brought us, or the network that brought us Space Ghost Coast to Coast and the Brack Show. Brack Presents the Brack Show, starring Brack, I think is what it was actually called at first. This is a weirdly animated, really bizarre game that is a lot of fun, if not a little careless. So what it is that you play as this animated ball who is actually like a person with a face and arms and legs and stuff. And they drop you onto, well, funny enough, you get to do the tutorial on an actual pool table, which is funny because it's almost the last time you get to see one.
Oh, God.
But, yeah. So you start off on a regular pool table, and the first thing you notice is that you have full range of movement to run around the table as you please with the ball. You can place it anywhere. You can do little jumps, which I think come in handy a little later. But since it is a pool game, the main thing is to hit it with the stick. So you line up the cue. It's very easy. You just aim the stick and push either the R trigger or the right back trigger. I forget what they're called on the Nintendo. I think it's R and RZ, ZR.
Something like that. Something stupid.
Yeah, one hits it soft, the other hits it hard. And the line is really easy to line up. It makes a laser line in front of you, and it shows also a laser line of the projected travel path of whatever you're hitting. If it turns yellow, that means that you are going to sink it in the hole if you hit it the right, at the right temperature. And that's where the game stops being normal. So you can clear the table like that. Of course, you clear all the balls. No, there's no stripes or solids here. It's actually each ball behaves differently based on its color, which we'll get to in a minute. But once you sink all of them, then the eight ball like starts throwing confetti and, celebrating and stuff. That means that you're about to win. So if you sink the eight ball, you get to move on to the next stage. Simple as that. And then you start to get into stages where it's not anything like a pool table, but there are holes and there are balls, and that you're supposed to put the balls in the holes. Sometimes you'll aim, like one of my favorites actually is the light blue ball, where when you aim the laser at it, where I said it showed you before, where it shows you the laser line to get to the hole, the blue ball will start screaming and running away. So it won't notice you if you just run up and hit it, but if you aim at it, then it runs away from you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's another ball that will artfully dodge you if you're actually lining up a good shot. There's a really heavy ball that basically can't be moved the first time, so it, like, you hit it and then it stomps the ground and, like, moves everything else, and then there's a brief moment where you can actually then, like, you know, once it's weakened or something, you can actually bat it around. And, like, just every level presents this new challenge that none of your skills in the wonderful game of billiards is going to actually help you at all. So
this sounds ridiculous.
It is. It's a very ridiculous game, and I quite like it. I think the only thing, and I was talking about it being slightly careless, I think there were a few little design oversights that, honestly, in a game like this, you just kind of overlook. For one, the camera doesn't move. It follows the ball pretty much, but it stays at a steady angle. So the angle is the side of the table, of course. So if you're trying to line up a shot, let's say along the side of the table that is nearest to the camera is not going to help you. You don't get your laser line. You don't. It won't pick up a little bit so you can see over the rim, you know, the edge of the table or whatever. Like, you basically have to do certain parts of the game blind, which didn't seem like that was something that had to be done. But, you know, it's not too bad, really. I mean, the other thing is that, so the game, it doesn't really care how many times, you hit your ball to, like, get all the other balls in the hole, but it will keep track and it'll, like, deduct. It'll basically tell you it counts it like golf. So every stroke, you know, you end up in the negative after a while, and then it just builds and builds. So it's like, eventually you get to like level 3 or whatever and you're like -40 and you just stop trying. So
God.
I really feel like the scoring system is just there to be like, well, here's how bad you did. The game at no point ever stops you from doing whatever you want, which is both good and bad. I think it's not a game that you should take seriously, unless you're playing it in multiplayer, which actually seems to be its strongest point. I have no friends and I will die alone, so I actually had to just load up the multiplayer and see what it was like. So I can't attest to the actual gameplay, but there's a couple of different modes, including a kind of slot machine mode that, like, selects the gameplay, the level, and, like, all kinds of stuff, just like 5 different variables. So you wind up with this totally random game with random rules. Or you can just have up to 4 players on 1 pool table, no turns. Everybody just has to try and sink those balls.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you all get to run around at once.
It's a free-for-all.
Exactly. A big free-for-all that sort of looks like pool. Apart from that, the music is really, it's really catchy, and I really like that between the levels, your ball is basically singing the song. Just like kind of doing vocalizations. It's just really cute while it tallies up your non-score. And yeah, there's just like a lot to love about this game, but I mean, don't think that this is a game you're going to quickly master, because it's very random and very unpredictable. But if that's your kind of thing, I think that this is a good one.
Nice. So $15 on this one. What is your verdict? Because I am going to follow it.
$15, I'm going to say, if you don't mind that it's going to be a little frustrating at times, go ahead and pick it up. If you have friends, especially if you have 3 friends that are willing to have a completely stupid time with you over this game, this is probably going to be on your short list of like party games to whip out. So if you have friends, for sure, pick this one up. It's going to be worth itself like 10 times over. One player mode, I'd say it's solid. Just don't be expecting an actual game of pool anytime soon.
I would not at all expect an actual game of pool from the world's least realistic pool simulator.
Exactly. That is truth in advertising right there. So whoever wrote that flavor, that whatever you call it, I guess flavor text, whoever wrote that, I don't know. I have a friend that's a copywriter, and I don't remember what that's even called. But whoever wrote that
blurb,
accurate. Yeah, it's a good blurb.
Cool. Next game to talk about is called Race Arcade, developed and published by Ice Flake Studios. It released July 17th on PS4 for $9.99. Race Arcade is the ultimate top-down racing game with a strong retro feeling and super smooth gameplay. This fresh and evolved racing experience seamlessly combines all the best parts from the good old racing games with the most recent technologies. Chris, how is Race Arcade?
Okay, so whoever wrote that... They need to calm down a little bit. this is a top down racer. You don't have to. I guess they have to sell it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So arcade racing, whatever. This is a top down racing game. Now, if you have not played these, I would not be surprised. There are very few of them. The most notable one, I believe, was Super Sprint on the SNES. There was also a kind of like, you know, Ivan Iron Man Stewart's off-road championship, whatever, on the NES was a fixed track, but I think it was like isometric or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of an arcade tradition in racing games where the camera never moves. It looks like a board game, essentially. And, you know, your little guys take off and it stays static. Like, and you have to, you know, finish the turns, get ahead of everyone else and win the race. This one, I'm not exactly sure how the gameplay has evolved in the last 30 years since Super Sprint was a game, but it's definitely extremely precise and very, very hard. You have one car, of course. Everything else has to be unlocked. But you can pick one of 10 colors at least. And everyone else is then the other color. And with your basic car, you run through 5 courses 3 times. It just does the 1 through 5. And then it ranks you and rewards you if you did rank at all. Like, you can get in 10th place every single time like I did. And it'll still let you move on. You just won't get any points for it, and the points are how you unlock everything else. Mm. You race through the 5 courses, race through them again in your career mode, and then at the end of that, if you don't have a new car, then you can get to do it all over again. I believe there's also multiplayer, but I only have the one PS4 controller, so I wasn't able to even select it. And then there's also just a single race, which I think that's probably the way to go for the one player until you get some more cars unlocked, because then you can pick from one of any of the career courses for, I guess, any of the cars, because there's just a ton of courses. There's like a million courses in this game.
Damn.
But for whatever reason, in career mode, you only do the 5 over and over again. They're arranged in like different things. Like, so you got your simple loop, you got ones that have like really sharp turns, you have ones that, you know, different things like that. And like the simple loop ones are just crazy because it's like you start, all the other cars are going the same speed as you, and the like it takes you like 11 seconds to get around the course. So it's like if you're not controlling perfectly and staying ahead of the competition, like there's no weapons, there's no Mario Kart style, you know, RC Pro-Am oil slick kind of things. You just gotta go fast and turn accurately. And don't get trapped in the cars, because there's no way to like crash. It's basically every collision of two cars is an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
Oh God.
In fact, I literally got stuck at the end of one race because one car was also stuck in this just giant pile of cars that had crashed into a corner. Because the race is over, and so I just had to wait out the timer because that other car, the other car couldn't get out of the other car's way in order to actually take that last lap. So
oh god,
pretty funny. So yeah, like I raced around like a million times, and eventually, like occasionally, I would get like first place or sixth place or third place or something like that. Get my points. I think I ended up with like 10,000 points, and the next unlock was 100,000 points.
Oh geez.
But looking ahead, it seems that if this is your kind of game, there's a lot waiting for you, because you can unlock everything from, like, you know, a standard car, an F1 racer, all the way up to like a tractor or a UFO.
Which you can't go wrong with a UFO.
No, exactly. So I'm not exactly sure what all that entails, but it looks like this is a game that has a lot in it. Despite the career mode being a little bizarre, I did some supplemental reading, because obviously I wasn't going to win enough career modes to unlock a UFO. And it seems that every vehicle has its own career mode, so they've selected tracks that suit that one. And the tracks, like, it's, for what this game is, like, for it being so simple and like having such a an arcadey, like, old school type look, it kind of bummed me out a little bit that the game does not let you cheat or anything like that. Like, you don't get to attack the cards, you can't crash them, and in some courses, if they have like these pinpoint turns, but you can like just run right through, like just run over the dirt and get to the next area, it won't count that lap. So even if you spin out and like accidentally end up on the other side of the road, you basically have to restart. Now, I will say, the one thing that I do like in this game is that you can restart infinitely, so it doesn't actually affect anything at all. So if you take a wrong turn, you end up like trapped in a corner or something like that, just restart the race. It'll be over in a minute.
Nice.
So, yep.
Well, overall, $10 on this. What do you think of it?
$10. This one has to have... I would say I would recommend this... to somebody who kind of knows what they're getting into. That is to say, top-down racers have a very limited fan base. I think there's a reason there's not a lot of them. But this is coming from somebody whose favorite racing game is Excite Truck. So I'm always looking for like ways that racing games sort of invert expectations and subvert them. So having said, this isn't going to be a hugely appealing game to like classic racing game people, your GTs and whatnots, your Gran Turismos and everything. However, if you are a fan of like this arcade style, you know, one screen kind of thing, then go ahead and give this a go. It definitely is going to be a huge challenge, because this game does require a lot of precision and finesse, more so I would say even than the like your GTs and your whatevers. So, if this sounds like something that appeals to you, go ahead and get it. Otherwise, check out some footage, see if you like it. And, yeah, I'd say it's a solid try it.
Cool, sounds good. Final game to talk about tonight is called Super Destronaut DX. We are revisiting this one, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattalaika Games, released July 17th on PS4 and Vita for $4.99, and is a cross-buy title, hooray. Inspired by an arcade classic, Super Destronaut DX is a retro space shooter that pits you against an enemy more dreaded than a UFO, a scoreboard. Chris, what did you think of this one?
Super Destronaut DX. I was so looking forward to, like, I was going to buy this one, and then you came at me with the PS4 release, and I'll tell you right off the bat that I liked the PS4 version so much that I went and purchased it on the Switch that same day.
Oh, nice.
So now I have it on both systems.
Oh, and technically you have it on the Vita as well, since it's a cross-buy game.
That's very true. I don't think that the Vita account is set up with my account, though. I might have to change that. I don't know. Anyway, yes, you're right, though. It's cross-buy, and sure enough, you do get two copies of the game with it if you have a Vita and a PS4, and your account is linked to both. So, Super Destronaut DX. So this is a shooter in the hallowed style of Galaga and Space Invaders, very clearly taking some cues from both. You have your ship that, you know, you run from side to side. You can't move just around the screen and willy-nilly. Your rows of enemies come up from the top of the screen. You clear them all, and then you move on to the next wave. That is where the similarities end, because this game throws everything in the book at you. For one, most of the rounds will contain a certain orange guy. Usually he's orange. I guess he's always orange. That will give you a power-up. One of four, all of them are great. Your triple shot, your bombs, your lasers that go through like whole rows of enemies and things like that. Whatnot. And yeah, and so in the classic mode, the point is that you basically keep shooting wave after wave until you die three times, and then it calculates your score. And if it's a very, very good score, then you can join the leaderboard.
Yay.
And yay. Or you can get one of the many easy to get trophies. Which
very easy to get.
I think you said you got like all of them in an hour or something.
On Xbox One, I got all the achievements in 22 minutes, and then I picked it up on PS4 and Vita as well because it was only $5, and on nice. PS4 today, I got all of the trophies. I got the Platinum Trophy in 13 minutes.
Jeez.
13.
That's really amazing. I know I got, like, a lot of them without even trying. I didn't even look at what they were, and it just kept, they kept handing them to me. Anyways,
yes, it's a very trophy friendly game, and even better with PS4 and Vita, they have separate trophy lists. So for $5, you can get 2 platinum trophies.
Amazing! As someone who doesn't care about trophies, I'm enthralled. I'm just kidding. I'm clearly a Nintendo boy, but I'm not reviewing the Nintendo version. So let's get back to PlayStation. So. Indeed. You have the classic version, which, you know, is just what it is. It is classic. It's a trip to the arcade. Then you have a really, really good, sort of, I forget what they call it. It's like basically challenge mode.
Yeah, challenges.
So, yeah. You do a list of challenges, as they rack up, you know, like basically get this many points, destroy this many waves, and then do it, within a certain amount of time, and then do it with one life in hard mode. It's like, you know, all kinds of stuff. It just keeps scaling up, and you just keep wanting to do it. Like, I couldn't, you know, basically Wild Horses couldn't tear me away from that A button, or X button.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't do PlayStation controls. cross button, actually, is what it's called.
Yeah, whatever, it's an X.
Yeah. And that's actually one thing I like about this game is the one button. They're like, no, you don't get 2 buttons. You have one button. One button and a stick. And so you can also do time attack mode, which is just basically infinite lives, but, you know, see how much score you can rack up in the amount of time they give you, which, of course, you want to avoid dying because they have score multipliers. And then you have hardcore mode, which is the same as classic mode, except that the enemies are way harder, shoot you way more, and you only have one life. Then you have then you have your options to make the screen shake, make the colors kind of like explode, like what do they call it? The color attenuation or something like that. No,
I don't remember.
That's not what it's called. Yeah, it's called something. Basically, it makes your eyes hurt, and then you can actually ratchet it up even more, and it gives you a warning about how it causes dizziness.
Oh, geez.
So you can get a real headache from this game if you want, or you can shut all that stuff off and just, you know, just enjoy it for what it is. I actually did turn it all on for quite a while. It was this is so good, but I feel so sick.
I'll have to check that out. I didn't even mess with that.
It's actually kind of fun. So what I like about this game is that for each and every one of these modes, every single time you start a round, whether it is like a challenge mode, a time attack, or something like that, like every wave of enemies seems like it's set up to kind of help you succeed. That is to say, if you're having to destroy waves of enemies, they might throw more weak enemies at you. If they're like, collect all the power-ups, and they'll send more power-up characters after you. And if they don't, you can just try again, because it's usually randomized in a certain way. But yeah, the whole setup of this thing, the way it moves, the way, like, everything goes, the soundtrack, like, this is basically the... Oh, and I actually forgot to mention is that while you're moving from side to side with your ship, the whole screen is actually moving forward, and as you destroy enemies, they end up in the background, being pulled towards the foreground, so they can actually still hit you as the lifeless corpses of enemies long dead. So they can also like get knocked out of the sky, and you can hit them while they're in the sky for bonus points, which is actually one of the challenge modes. So I actually do like that the game moves on two planes in that way, even if it's mostly dealing with the 2D, you know, side-to-side plane. But yeah, just like everything about this game is basically perfection of the formula of what I usually call the still shooter. That is to say, the where you're just at the bottom of the screen and everything just kind of comes at you passively.
That's a good term
rather
for
than,
it.
I call it that, but I mean, nobody else has to. But if they do, it's trademark Chris Taylor 2018. So yeah, like there is no aspect of this game that was not like incredibly fun for me. So really, really like it.
So $5, I kind of have an idea where you're going with this, but what's your official verdict?
$5, you should buy it twice. Whatever systems you have, because this game is worth more than $5, to be honest. Like I said, I played it on PS4 and immediately had to have it on Switch. So, I mean, this is absolutely a game that you can't miss if you're in any way a shooter fan or just a fan of like old arcade games like that. Like some people who aren't even shooter fans like Galaga. So yeah, this is absolutely a game to pick up and be watching for more from these guys, because man, I was super impressed by this one.
Well, if you enjoyed that, they Petite Games also did the game Inksplosion. You could check that one out.
Oh yeah, okay, cool. I think I looked at that one and it looked pretty good.
Well, there you go. Now you know which one to pick up next.
Yay!
Yay! Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thank you so much for joining. Thanks again to everyone else who came on and to William Reyes for chatting about the new Final Fantasy IV Guitar Collections album. Such
Oh yeah,
such
I
good
need to
stuff.
Pick that up.
You do. And if you I can't will. Pick it up yet, just stay tuned because we're going to play music from it.
Hooray! I will stay right here and listen.
Sounds good. Do you have any final words?
I think Wilfred's saying it all right now from the other room, if you can hear him.
Meow.
Yeah, he's like, meow, 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 meow. Just yowling. He, too, wants to hear William Reyes, so let's get that music going.